on this computer.
So that was me in the box down there.
Yes, that was me. That was us together.
Okay. Sorry. All right.
Hi, everybody. Last test, promise. If you can hear me, give me a thumbs up.
All right.
Wonderful. Can you guys hear us okay? Okay, good. So, welcome. It's March 9th, Friday.
Yes. I'm not in the screen moving it like that. There we go.
And we only have one question, but I have a feeling there might be people out there that want to chat. At least I'm hoping. Otherwise, this might be a quick call. We have an announcement to make. And after a lot of business planning and market surveys, we decided to do something different with Team Zen. There's no market surveys, and there was no, we actually just decided at a breakfast about an hour ago. But we'll make them wait for that one.
No.
Or we'll just tell you right now. Yeah, you explain it, I'll fill in.
So Todd is right now doing something for his retreat where he's using a lot of Byron Katie's work. Many of you who listened to our show, you already knew Byron Katie before. You learned about her from the show. And basically, she has this whole methodology that she calls the work, which is basically just questioning your own thoughts and how you think. And her first book was called Loving What Is. And we have decided that for 4 weeks.
We'll see.
We are going to be working with Loving What Is, meaning I'm just going to reread it. I mean, I was showing Todd. Hold on. Where's the other one? I don't know if you guys noticed, those of you who are at the conference, but we had a table of some of our old books that, you know, we were ready to let go of. And I think I sold Loving What Is, unfortunately. But we pulled out her newer books, too, just so you could see what she looks like.
This is what she looks like.
Yeah, that's Byron Katie. But that's this one, too. But we're not going to do these two books. We are going to do Loving What Is. Now, what does that mean? You don't have to do this. This is not like, okay, now we're in a book club and you have work to do.
No.
You don't need to do a thing.
No work.
We're not going to do Zen talks about it necessarily.
No way, man.
Unless you have questions. All we're going to do is use the Facebook page for it. So we're going to read. And if you guys have questions in the book or you have passages that you love.
Comments, realizations,
right.
Anything. Basically, we're just trying to create a loose structure of us kind of processing something together. Mm-hmm.
But if you're like, I don't want to read books, it's not going to mess up your Team Zen experience. But I thought that it might be fun for on the Facebook page, you know, when Todd and I find something in it that we think is great, you know, you guys can comment on it and vice versa. So that's it.
I want to say hi to Aaron and Millie and Sean and Peggy and Kimmy and Amy and Kelly and Kristen and Mimi and Jennifer, who's in the car today, I think.
Yes.
And Sarah and Jennifer and Karen and the old 401 area code.
Yeah, some
we don't
people
know
have
who
to
that
call
is.
In. It's good to see you guys. I feel like I just saw a lot of you like yesterday.
Yes, so I'm going to unmute Kelly. I have a question written down, but I'm going to start with a live question. Unmuting. Kelly, are you there?
I'm here. So I'm going to try to make this short, but it's complicated. I have a nephew who is 20 and he's actually graduating next week from Army boot camp. But my brother has 5 kids and he about 8 years ago got divorced and it went pretty well for a while. And then things started to not go as well between the parents and with the kids and everything. And so my oldest nephew has actually been estranged from my brother for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And he was from us for a while too. And I've kind of continued to work and we've gotten to where he's back in touch. And basically it all revolves around him, a misunderstanding where his mom, I believe, gave him more information than he should and kind of led him to believe his dad wasn't paying what he should. And so I feel a little, I want to help with the family situation. And I also am in a position to have a little more information because at my last company, I was my brother's HR person, which is weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know how much child support he was paying. And I know a lot of the details that my nephew doesn't know. And my brother has chosen rightfully to not, you know, try to counter what the mom was saying. So, and I know that like he was very generous in you know, the divorce decree and everything, gave her 3 years to get her degree, let her stay in this very large house, you know, gave her 3 years to do that, gave her alimony for that time period. And then like, even after that, she didn't get his name off the house and he gave her like another year plus. Wow. So it's like my nephew is not understanding everything. Mm. But to add to that, he was, when he was, I think maybe 10, kind of diagnosed as on the spectrum. Back then it was called PDD-NOS, which I think is, you don't have autism, you don't have Asperger's, but you're on the spectrum. Right. So I feel like that is complicating a lot of it because he's not understanding emotional aspects. So I want to, you know, I feel like I have an opportunity to say something to him, but I don't want to do it in a way that would alienate him. So I guess I'm looking for some advice on how I can be like, hey, like, you know, everything is not exactly as you think, but I, you know, without getting into a debate about it.
So how old is this young man?
20.
And you have a relationship with him somehow?
I do. So he's my nephew.
Does your brother and his dad, do they talk at all?
My brother is his dad.
Yeah. And do they talk at all?
No, they have not for the last 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. And one more complicating factor is my brother is not actually his biological dad, but has been married to his mom since before he was born, has raised him. Like, Ethan has now met his biological dad, but has no relationship with him. And there was never any child support or anything like that.
So that's kind of layered. So what are you, so let's say you can talk to your nephew right now, unfiltered. What would you want him to know?
I would want him to know that his dad has done, you know, he's done more than he thinks, that he you know, is provided for the family, that, you know, that adult things are complicated and there's more, it's between him and his mom, his dad and his mom, really. What happened, and you know, that Ethan's holding this against my brother when he only has like his mom's side of the story. Mm. So I just want to find a way to open a door to kind of say, like, you know, it's more complicated than you think. And sometimes you have to kind of forgive and look past things, or, you know, accept that you don't have all the information.
What do you think his response might, like, what's the cost? What's the risk of you saying exactly what you just said to him?
He might decide not to talk to me too.
Go ahead.
I would say that I like Todd's line of questioning, because basically what he's saying is, first you got to be clear about what you want him to know before you go into something and you're like, there's just so much to it. It's like, you got to be clear about what is the intention. What is your intention? And then the second thing is because he's 20, I think about 20 a little bit like I do 13. It's a new phase of I know everything, especially after coming out of Army boot camp. My goodness, you know, think about what has registered in him after a boot camp, you know, is that I would take the opportunity to go into the situation and say, and you know what your intention is, so you can be very clear and grounded, but to say, I know a topic you and I never approach, or maybe you do approach it, is my brother, your dad. And we don't necessarily need to open the whole thing, but I'm wondering if I can ask you a few questions and you let me know. And when you get uncomfortable, we'll stop. And you may ask him one question and he'll say, stop. And that's okay, Kelly, because it doesn't all need to be solved in that. But what you did is you cracked open the door. And then when you ask him questions, you're not going to, you know, when he answers it, then you say to him, can I give my perspective as someone who loves you and him and your mom, even if his mom's a challenge, you're going to say, I love her too, because you're all family, right? And say, I would like to offer my perspective. You offer your perspective. And he may say, okay, I'm done. And that's okay. But it's like, instead of walking on eggshells around a subject that is just, it is part of your family, you're going to open the door, but then respect his time frame around how long he wants to discuss it. But then the next time, and then say, when I take you to lunch again or dinner again, or when you come over to my house or whatever arrangement you have, say, I might ask you one more question. And the only reason I'm doing this is it's not because I need anything from me personally. You know, it's not like I need to convince you of anything. It's just that I just see, you know, how we are a family. And if we all kind of could see each other's perspectives. And again, that's how, you know, I'll use that diagnosis, PDD, pervasive developmental disorder. Basically, it is a difficulty in acknowledging other people's experiences. It's not that the diagnosis means you're not empathetic, but it's very harder. It's harder to get in someone else's shoes. So you're right. There's a little bit of a obstacle, but it's not impossible. And so I think that if you can go into this lunch or whatever without thinking you're going to solve the whole thing, but that you're just going to crack it open, then you can go home and be like, I'm at peace, because you're walking toward it and you're standing in your truth about it, but you're also not forcing him to do anything he's not ready to do. 20 is a tough age.
Yeah. And Kathy's point, baby step it. Yeah. Kind of like, I think in our minds, we want to like have this breakthrough the minute that we decide that it's time for this young man to have a breakthrough, but it's going to come, if it comes at all, it's going to come probably in steps and layers, and it's really not going to be anything that you say to him anyways. You might like open a window up for him so that he can
realize himself,
peek through it. It's funny, whenever I talk to dads, friends of mine who are dads who are going through a divorce, I always say, and I don't know how this relates, but don't ever disparage your wife or your former wife to your kids.
Like, he's done a good job of that.
Right, because the first thing is, they're going to eventually know who their parents are without your help. Like, they don't need somebody else to tell them. The second thing is what we've said on the podcast a bunch of times, which is, if you disparage their mom, and I know this has nothing to do with what you're saying, Kelly, I'm just talking more.
She said her brother.
Yes. So I would just keep that in mind as far as baby steps and leaning your way into it. I want to unmute you just to see if you had any thoughts on it. Go ahead, Kelly.
And that's incredibly helpful, because it has been, it's something that I'm avoiding. I've only been back in touch with him for about 6 months, and I've been working on trying to get him connected back to his grandparents, which is happening. So I've been afraid to blow everything apart. So that's really helpful to give me kind of a way to open the door, but not just dump it all out there.
And even before you start, Kelly, to say to him, I want you to know something before I even ask you this question. What's most important to me right now in this moment is our relationship. I feel so lucky to be back here with you. So before I start, I want you to know, because a lot of times kids, again, I'm thinking like 20-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 3-year-olds, is like, you want something from me. And you want him to know right up front, I need nothing from you. This is, we've already got what you and I need. Now, let's expand the conversation, and again, I don't know if that'll make a difference to him or to you, or if it's unnecessary. It's just, I kind of feel like kids are so, they know when we're trying to change their mind about something and they'll push back. So you set the tone by saying, first and foremost, you and me, and we're going to be together and we've worked through this. And so you and me,
And so keep us updated on the Facebook page, or maybe a future Zen Talk, just to see how it's going. I'm getting some comments. And it sounds like Kathy's voice is really breaking up. And can you guys just type in chat if it's happening to everybody, or if it's just happening to one or two people? Or I don't know how to... I know, it's just weird that it's happening to your voice and not mine. It's frustrating.
So you can hear Todd, but not me?
Am I breaking up a lot?
Hmm.
But she's right at the computer. You can hear Todd. Can... Kimmy says it depends. Keep typing. I'm going to go get another microphone. And in the meantime, read that question.
Okay, but I'm going to lean toward the computer. Can you guys hear me better if I'm leaning toward the computer? So I'm seeing a few nuts, so I just won't lean back. I don't know if that'll make a difference. So here's the next question. And this was on the Facebook page, for those of you who are on the Facebook page. And it was a question, it was a good one, because I think a lot of people feel this way about incorporating paradox into our understanding of our kids. So Carney asked, I've always told my kids to trust their gut, but I'm intrigued by Byron Katie's questioning of our thoughts. And again, we're going to talk about her book this month. And she said, without reading the book yet, she hasn't read the work yet, but she said, if we're questioning our thoughts, won't that make us then question our guts? Or maybe that's not a bad thing. She said, I loved Kathy saying we can do hard things, but then what if a kid is presented with a situation like peer pressure and they say to themselves, I can do hard things, like go against my gut instinct. So she's saying, I may be completely off base here. Hold on.
Keep typing.
Oh, okay. But if that plugs in, then can they still?
We'll see.
So her question is, what I think, in the nutshell, what is the difference? Hello, hello. Can you guys hear me? I have a microphone.
Everybody just chill.
People are like, haven't we been doing this for 6 months? Why do you guys have tech problems?
They're setting up. This is called a snowball. You guys see our new microphone?
It's not new. This is what we used to do Zen Parenting on.
Oh, cool. There we go. Let's do this.
Todd and I used to sit right next to each other.
This is how we used to do our podcast.
And then we'd call it the blue ball.
No, we wouldn't.
Yes, we would. Blue, and it's a ball.
Yes.
We wouldn't.
I know, sweetie, but this is the rated PG.
But all I didn't say it.
Get your head out of the gutter. All right, so I need some help on chat. For those of you guys in front of your laptop, is this the same, better, or worse? I don't even know if it's reading the blue ball.
Someone said better. Better. Ooh, the blue ball is working. Yay. Okay. See, blue ball is
the blue
good.
Ball is in the house.
All right. So the question is the difference between guts and thoughts, okay? And some people, I think Callie commented on it and somebody else commented on it, and because I liked other people's, to hear other people's words about this, because we all come at it differently. But there is a very big difference between your internal guidance and the thoughts in your head. I think the best way to differentiate is the body. Your body never lies to you, okay? So when you are having heartache, or your stomach is churning about something, or a lot of people can pick it up with migraines or with, you know, stomach aches, or they just walk into a place and they don't feel right. Body instinct is your gut, okay? Thoughts are basically the programming that you have accumulated throughout your life. Some of it very good, you know, it's not about one's bad, one's good. But it gets you more into a processing mode of thinking through something and possibly making decisions based on knowledge. Now, there is a time and place for that. You know, your body instinct does not tell you what 2 + 2 is. Your brain does. But when you're trying to make a decision of what's best for me, it is absolutely essential to have quiet in whatever form that is. It doesn't have to be a formal meditation, but where you can feel, and if you guys are seeing what I'm doing, if ever I'm making a decision, and sometimes I even do this in restaurants when I'm choosing what I want to eat, you know, when you're choosing between two things on a menu and you're taking forever and everyone's annoyed at you, I literally put my hand over my heart and I say, what do I want? Do I want this or do I want this? And I can feel in my body which one I want, okay? Now, some people will say, I have a girlfriend who changes her mind about what she wants to eat in a restaurant all the time. And then when we all get our food, she has food envy and she's like, I should have gotten that. And it's because she's using her thinking or saying, well, that's too many calories, or I ate that yesterday, or I should get something different. And she's not just listening to herself. I'm using choosing from a restaurant as a very benign, very simple example of more difficult decision making. As parents, though, we have to use that and teach our kids to use that so they can differentiate, because all the time when they're little, they already know what's best for them. They walk out in a striped shirt and a polka dot skirt and a crazy headband, and then we say, go change. And they're like, what? They feel good in it. And we say, no, your instincts are wrong. Even if we don't use that word, we start to shape them. And we don't, with love, again, we're not doing it because we're trying to damage them. Or they'll say, you know, the example I used, I'm ready to be done with soccer. And we'll say, nope, two more seasons. And so they've been trying to kind of go with what feels right. And we've been telling them no a lot of the time. And then they don't trust it anymore. And it moves them straight from their heart up into their head. And then decisions based on what's best for my mom or my dad or the school or my teacher. And so our job is to help them get back into this place. But the most important way to do that is for us to role model it. I mean, my girls see me do that a lot. And they don't always do it. But it's not uncommon for me to say to them, what does your body think? You know, what is your body telling you? What's right for you? And we have to demonstrate that through our words and actions.
So I'm tempted to kind of go through the questions right now with her question, the work. So she's wondering about trusting your gut. And if we're always questioning our thoughts, when is our gut lying to us?
What she wants to know is what's the difference, right?
Right. And I would, you know, so Carney's not on this call, but, you know, the four questions, and this is kind of a preview for the work, is so her thought is, if we question all our thoughts, then are we also questioning our heart-centered instinct? I feel like that's the framework of her question.
It is, but basically, I think the essential truth about this question is she hasn't differentiated. She thinks guts are thoughts.
So that's what I want to do is it true that when you question your thoughts that you're also going to be going against your intuition? And the answer would be, maybe her first answer is yes, it would be. And then say, are you absolutely certain that that's true? And, you know, it's hard to do this because she's not on.
I was going to say, this is a tough one to do it with because we already know the answer. Like one that we could do it is, I like where you're going, is do you believe that if you allow your child to trust their guts, that they'll make a poor decision? Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Right. And the answer might be yes or it might be no.
Right. And she might say, well, yes. And then the question is,
are you absolutely certain that that's true? And then what feelings arise for you when you have that thought, when you think that your kids are not going to trust their guts? And the answer would probably be, I'm stressful, I'm tense, I feel like I'm doing things wrong, I don't know what to do, I need somebody to tell me what to do. And then the last question of the work is, who would you be without those thoughts? Mm-hmm. And hopefully the answer would be something like,
more laid back.
I would be more free. I would be, you know, I would.
Kinder to my kid.
Right. Things like that. And then there's a turnaround, which is the last part of it.
I trust that my kids know how to trust their guts.
Exactly. So that's like a quick preview of what, if you guys do decide to read this book. Actually, if you don't want to read the book, I just downloaded a PDF that I'm going to use on my retreat next week. So it might be, and we'll include that in the email, and that will kind of be a preview. And if you really like this, then you can get the book. Mm-hmm. It's a quick, easy way of doing that.
You know, the last thing I'll say about guts, because we have to trust this, know this, our kids are going to override their guts sometimes, because you guys do too. Thank you. Can you hear me now? Better? So our kids are going to override their guts sometimes. Like sometimes their choices will be based on thoughts and peer pressure and influence from other people. So for us to be like, oh, I hope they trust their gut every time, we have to turn that around on us. Do you guys trust your gut every time? Because I can even say that there are times I make choices based on other people's needs. And I think that life is a practice of recognizing when we do that and correcting it
maybe at a faster rate than we would have previously. Okay. So it's not about perfection. I think part of the human experience and part of being connected to others is sometimes we make choices not based on what's best for us. Sometimes we do it for other people. And sometimes that's the way it was supposed to play out. So, you know, to Carney's question, your child will sometimes not listen to their body. But then when the conversation that you have with your child about it is, how did that feel to override your guts? Look at what the end result was. Now, do you understand, not in a condescending way, but can you now see the importance of body wisdom? And I use body wisdom with everything. Like when one of my daughters gets sick, like they, you know, like when we all had the flu, I'm not like, oh, it shouldn't, you know, well, this is not true. I did this to myself. I shamed myself about it. But with my kids, it's a lot easier, right? When, you know, if they're like, I just don't think I can go to school, or I'm sick, I'm like, listen to your body. You know, I don't think I can eat this. I'm full. Listen to your body.
So when we say that, first of all, we just activated the blue ball and it cleared everything up. So we didn't activate it before. So
oh, blue ball.
You got to activate.
Activation.
Blue ball activation woo. Intact. I don't know if
so
you want to
I was like screaming at everyone. I'm like, hello.
So I don't think we need to lean in like we used to.
But don't you want to because it's fun?
So we've talked about this idea on the podcast. The idea of flipping a coin. So like say you're stuck or your kids, you could use this for your kids if you don't want to use it for yourself. You're stuck and you don't know whether or not to go out with these people for a dinner date or stay home and watch a movie. Doesn't matter. It could be big. It could be small. Flip a coin. Heads means you're going out with your friends. Tails means you're staying home and watching a movie. By the way, I hope it's heads because I like going out.
I hope it's tails.
I want heads. So you flip the coin and whatever it lands on is not what you're going to do. But what you do is you pick up on your body intelligence to figure out how did your body react when it landed on heads and said, I'm going out. If you're like, sweet, time to go out, then you know the right answer. If you're like, oh, shoot, I
lost my own coin toss.
Then you know the answer. And we don't use that very often, no. But we have and it helps.
I use it in my mind, though. I don't use it as literally, but for those of you who were at the conference 2 years ago, you heard this story. For those of you who are at the conference this year, you met Annie Burnside. She told this story 2 years ago, which is why I'm saying you might have heard this before. But she always tells a story because she obviously has talked to her. Am I screaming now? She has shared she does body wisdom with her children all the time too. And she shared a story about how her daughter, her middle daughter, who is an excellent soccer player, she was going into high school, and here's what's interesting. The high school that she was going into, her dad was the soccer coach. Not only was her dad the soccer coach, but he is a premier soccer coach. They win state almost every year, okay? So, you know, the family's all excited because Piper's going into high school, and her dad's going to coach her, and they're going to be this great team. And Piper was like, I don't know if I want to play soccer anymore. And so obviously, initially, Annie and her husband were like, oh my goodness. Like it was a little bit of a shock. Like, wow, you know, because she'd been playing since she was very little. But then they sat her down and Annie walked her through something. And she said, put your hand on your heart, envision your freshman year with soccer. How does it feel? And Piper walked through it. She's like, okay, normal, regular, stressful, typical. And then she said, now let go. Put your hand on your heart, envision your freshman year without soccer. And she lit up and she said, exciting, new, fun, what I'm supposed to be doing. So that kind of exercise with your children where you allow them to tell you based on what it feels like in their body, it's a visualization, can be a really fun exercise. So, and that practice can be with choosing something from a menu. It can be with what pajamas do you want to wear tonight? It can be with what dress should I wear to the dance? It doesn't always have to be huge decisions. The practice of the little decisions helps when a big decision comes along.
All right. Guess who has a question, sweetie?
Millie.
No, guess.
Who? Peggy. Jen.
Jennifer does. Hi, Jennifer.
Yes, yes, yes. I can't shut up. I'm sorry.
It's you can't keep quiet. It's
hey,
all
man,
right.
If we didn't have you, exactly. We'd be talking to ourselves the whole time.
I have someone who just joined us, which is part of my question.
Hey.
Say hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Conference that I told you about.
Yeah. He hated that I was at the conference.
Because I bet. Said,
no. It's no fun when I'm not here.
A little bit of guilt for your Friday.
Exactly. Exactly. So the one thing I wanted to say was about, you know, our kids when we're thinking about their choices. And I'm thinking of my older son who, I think that when our kids, we're trying to teach our kids to trust their gut. We also almost try to save them from themselves. Mm. Like we think, all right, we want them to trust their gut, but maybe they don't really know what their gut is. So let's try to, if they make this decision and we let them make this decision, this could be a really bad one. So we try to save them from making the really bad decision. But what I've learned is that really bad decision sometimes is the best life lesson for them. That my older son, especially, because his decisions are a little more consequential now since he's older, that those moments, even if his decision turns out to be a total disaster, he learns so much from it. Mm-hmm. So I think that as parents, we try to keep our kids from experiencing pain, but pain can be the greatest teacher. And I think that's really, really hard, because there's times where I catch myself saying, oh, I don't want my kids to experience the pain I felt. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to have that because it was so hard. But then to step back and say, you know, if we hadn't had that pain ourselves, we wouldn't have learned the greatest things.
I think Daddy wants you.
We're having a little fight at our house right now. So this is like real life parenting.
In action.
In action.
That's right.
Quite stressful. And I'm keeping it real.
That's right, man.
So anyway, my other thing that I want to say was a couple things about the conference. Number one, everyone on the call who I met, I just really feel so happy that I got to connect with everybody in person, that I got to know everybody. The people who I didn't get to meet, I'm sorry, and I hope I meet you next year. But I felt so connected to everybody before I went. And then after having gone, it just really filled me up. Like now I look at everybody's face and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I hugged Millie. I saw Karen. I saw Mimi. I met her daughter. Like it was such a really wonderful feeling. Kelsey, Kelly, like everybody. So I just want to say I'm really grateful for that experience.
Yes, we are too.
And so that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, are you going to stay or are you going to go? Because I can talk to you when I'm done, okay? All right. That's Andrew, by the way.
Hi, Andrew.
They said hi. So one of the things that has happened is since I've been home is that we've had another big storm. So I got home really late Saturday night. So I saw everybody on Sunday. And then Monday we didn't have school because our town had all these power outages. Then the kids went to school on Tuesday and they've been home ever since Tuesday. So we've had a snow day Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Mm. So hold on, I'm going to shut the door. I'm ready to kill everyone. Like, I really feel like, you know, I come home from this conference and I'm feeling really good and I'm thinking it's going to fill me up. And now, like, I just want to cry because I guess that the point I'm trying to make to everybody is I'm in that shame cycle because I feel really bad now. I feel like I had this great experience. I love having you guys as a resource and a support. And right now I just feel terrible about myself because I feel like being home with my kids for all these days and in this snowstorm and like neighbors are losing power and people are coming over and I don't know how to take care of myself under these circumstances. So I feel like I'm totally unraveling and I feel like I'm no good to anybody and I can't get away from anyone because they're all here. And Andrew is the one that we have talked about before who has all that anger and his anger is flaring up so badly. And he, like, I just feel like I'm not being a good mom to him because I'm like, get away from me. I can't stand you right now. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because if anybody else feels that way sometimes that, I just gave my friend a bracelet that says good enough on it. And I don't feel good enough. Mm-hmm. And especially right now, I don't. So the idea of us not being alone and supporting each other, I guess I just in this moment really just wanted to say thank you all for being here because I was really looking forward to this call and felt like it was really the only thing that was going to get me through the last week of being in this craziness. So I guess it's less of a question and more of a thank you very much.
Oh, you're sweet. All right, I'm going to mute you. So you're having cabin fever because you're, you know, this is a recipe for disaster. and you just felt filled up. It's funny. I want to say something from the stage and I forgot to. There's so many things I wanted to share. And one of them was, you're filled up right now and you think it's going to hold for the rest of life. And then by Monday afternoon, you're like back to where you were. So it's not about, you didn't come to the conference or you didn't read that book or you didn't seek out help from a support for future benefits. You did it for the moment itself. And what happened this weekend, for those of you who were able to make it, you got your cup filled. But if you do it with the intention to always have your cup filled, that is not living what's going on. So that's the first thing I want to say. And, you know, like, this is everything you're experiencing right now, Jennifer. I think it's safe to say that every parent that's on this call right now has experienced it. And I think it's safe to say that every parent on this call will experience it again. And the bottom line is, it will pass. Mm-hmm. And I know that's cliche and cheesy and unhelpful, but it's also the truth.
Yeah, I actually have three things to say. Number one, you're setting yourself up for failure because you filled up your cup this weekend and you came home and you have been in a snowstorm and everyone's been in the house and you think you should be doing better. So you set yourself up to be like, I should be doing better. So you're, the shame spiral you're in is, I should be feeling different than I do. And you shouldn't be, because you didn't go, it could be like Todd said, it could be a conference or a book or therapy or whatever. We don't go do that and then come home and be like, I should be totally different. What it is we have a new tool. And the new tool is the awareness of, and when I say a new tool, I don't mean like literally, it's like a, you can look back and say, I am so annoyed right now. Everyone's driving me nuts. I am crazy. But I know that it won't always be this way because this weekend I felt so differently. Or because like Todd said, you do it for the moment. But the truth is, everything you got from this weekend isn't gone. Mm-hmm. It's not like you've lost it. You can never lose it. That's, you know, that's one thing. When I used to go to, there was this woman I used to work with in my 30s, and sometimes I would bring a notebook and I would want to write down everything she's saying. And she's like, stop writing things down and just trust that you have it. And that if it's resonating, it's just strengthening that. And, but what we then end up doing with education and knowledge and connection and all these good things is then we turn it around on ourselves. And when we come home and when we're set up with a situation where we're in, we're literally stuck in the house and the electricity's out. And Todd and I have been in those situations too in Chicago. It's a freaking nightmare. And so to think that you could possibly feel the way you did this weekend right now, you are shame spiraling yourself, because they're completely like night and day. So the thing that I would say to you is, like, last night, my children would not stop wanting to hang out with me. And I know that sounds like a funny thing to say, but like, I had said goodnight like three times, like big hug, goodnight. And then it started to become a joke, because I was like, everybody, the last thing I think I said to everybody was, everybody leave me alone. Don't come in here anymore. And then it became a joke. Like, they'd come in, they'd be like, one more hug or whatever. I try and use humor around my needs rather than anger at their inability to understand. Because the truth is all your children just do want to be around you, and they're going crazy too. But you're their outlet. You know, like, you're your own outlet, but you're their outlet. So they will try and suck whatever they can from you. And at some point, like, I literally was like, I am so done. And when you're done and they do leave you alone, sometimes you can go into that shame spiral of, oh, I can't believe I did that. But you have to, as long as you were respectful of yourself and respectful of them in the best way possible, meaning you're not going to say it perfectly, your tone may not be perfect, but you always have tomorrow. You can wake up and say, I'm better now. Thank you, everybody, for leaving me alone. Like, I need that. And that's okay. Like, I think what I'm trying to get to is we shame spiral ourselves around the wrong thing, which is, I should be feeling different and doing this differently, rather than I'm just going to accept this is the way it is and this is what I need. And then tomorrow when I'm better, I'll let everybody know I'm better. Mm-hmm. And so anyway.
Amy Rose, you said that you wanted to say something.
Hi. Well, actually, I had sent a question that I wanted to raise today, and it fits really well into this conversation. Tuesday morning, I did the same thing. I responded to my child in a way that I could not be proud of, and so I shame spiraled, she went to school, I went to work, and I had to email the teacher and say, can you please hug my child and say that I love her? I guess then parenting weekend wore off already. And the teacher responded by saying, won't there be so many mornings like that in the future? Smiley face. And Amen. She's right. Like, I have to stop thinking that going to Zen Parenting or listening to you every week is going to make me perfect.
Correct.
It's just going to help me become more self-aware. And what I'm really aware of right now is that I need to figure out how to really take care of myself so that I can show up as the mom I want to be for my kids. So I'm struggling with this question because I was even asked by a business coach a few weeks ago, what do you do every day to exquisitely take care of yourself? And I have phases of my life where my meditation is really strong, or my yoga is really strong, or my running is going really well, but I kind of move through those phases too. So it's hard for me to say, this is something that I do every day to take care of myself. And I'm really just wondering what, like, I'm following what my body's feeling. I'm meditating when I feel like I need to meditate, or run or work out. I'm just wondering if anyone else like does have like daily practices that they follow to kind of keep yourself in that spot of exquisite self-care.
Great question. Other people may want to answer this too, either in writing or raise their hand, but I'll answer this just because for myself, I do have practices, but one of my practices is exactly what you said. Like, I went to yoga Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then yesterday I didn't want to go to yoga. That was my exquisite self-care. I didn't feel like it. And what I wanted to do was get up and take a shower and have a different day. I wanted to go get coffee. I don't like the idea of every day has to be structured the exact same way. That is not self-care for me. Like, I like to have surprising mornings. And with my work schedule and with life and with kids, that's hard because we can get into the autopilot routine. So, Amy, that's like what I, like what you just said is how you'll get going on yoga and then you'll do something else or it changes. And my question to you is, could that be exquisite self-care? That you let things come and go instead of that you do the exact same thing every day? And again, you may say, well, kind of, but I'd like to have something more structured. That's fine too. Like, it may be before you wake up in the morning, you lay there for 5 minutes, and it doesn't have to be huge to be grounding. But I think that the ability to let go of something occasionally is just as important as doing it every day, because otherwise you've just shifted your certainty. So all of a sudden people are like, I'm afraid if I don't go to yoga, I'll have a bad day. And that's not true always. Sometimes you need to not go.
Did you go yesterday?
Well, no, that's my whole story. Mm-hmm. Did you hear the beginning of my story?
No. Ow.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Glasses. Todd just said, did you go to yoga yesterday? And that was my whole story.
Maybe
was
they
that I
missed
didn't.
It too, sweetie. Oh, I'm just trying to let you prove your point.
Okay, let
I'm
me
trying
prove
to
it
make
again.
You look good.
Good. Thank
if
you.
If you don't look good, we don't look good. Vidal Sassoon.
Where'd they go? Okay, so does anybody else have a comment?
I want to say something about this whole situation, but especially to Jennifer. Jennifer always comes on, and she's so cheery and bright and has all these really good questions. And today she's having a crappy day.
Yeah.
And I just want to just honor the fact
Welcome to the
that,
club.
That you showed your vulnerability with us. So
yes.
I just want to acknowledge that and say thank you for role modeling something that I'm working on. So thank you.
Yes, that's
she's,
good.
Look at her. I could see her breathing. Yeah. That's awesome.
Did you want to say something, Amy Rose, about her schedule?
No, you knocked it out.
Does anybody else have a schedule?
I don't know. Does anybody else have anything to add? Raise your hand if you do. And
Or type it. I have a comment. Aaron
Hold
does.
On. I got to find Aaron. There's Aaron. Hi, Aaron.
Hey. I would just totally empathize with what Jennifer was saying, that it was great to meet everybody at the conference. It was great to catch up with a great girlfriend that lives in Iowa who was brave enough, despite our differences. She's a conservative Republican. I'm clearly, you know, a Democrat, but she could, you know, we can come together.
Yes.
This whole parenting journey. She's a working dairy vet like myself with four kids. She also has four kids. So great to catch up with her. Great to see you all. I totally lost my shit with my kids.
We all did.
Just, you know, a really bad day out of the house. I've recently resigned from my typical James Harriet type role, which my parents have given me a lot of grief about. Finally, I told them, I think you identify more with me being a vet than I do.
Mm, interesting.
And I'm still working for my husband's dairy. We have 3,500 animals. So how many patients do I have in order to still be a practicing vet? So there's so much in the background all the time. And that's what I would have to say to Jennifer. Like, yeah, I went to this parenting conference, a big pat on the back for myself, you know, and totally, I can totally empathize. Like you thought, okay, now I'm going to have it together. Now that I've done this, I will not lose my patience anymore. Nice. And I think we need to give ourselves some grace. Oh. I do have regular routines and I do fall off of those. Again, we just need to give ourselves some grace, but also connected learning. Like, this is why I love this. I think this is fantastic. So thank you. The conference was fantastic. I also have a question.
Yes.
So this is, again, about my 9-year-old son. He must just be going through some stuff. I want to support him in making a decision that is good for him. So he's a hockey player. He recently tried out for a travel team and did not make it. Mm-hmm. And there was discussion ahead of time. You know, I was not that keen about the travel team because we have 4 kids and it's more money and it's more time commitment and everything. So there was discussion ahead of time whether or not we would even let him try out. Mm-hmm. We have 3 girls and 1 boy. He is my most sensitive child. Mm. And so I feel this guilt this morning because I feel like, damn it, I should have known that he would react like this if he did not make the team. Mm-hmm. And I have just put my foot down and said, this is not for you right now. So the reaction I got this morning when I told him he didn't make it was he shrugged, he started to tear up a little, you know, his lips quivering, and he says, well, I knew I wasn't going to make it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I guess now... I don't even know if I want to play house next year. And so I just breath and I was like, yep, you know, I mean, that's fine. If that's what you decide next year, we'll decide that next year. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking for not kudos, but just how do I, you know, suggestions. Like, this is a really tough spot for him because he got thrown off a horse last year and had a really bad concussion, and he could not play his final year in that age group where they transition. It's a big transition year. So he was a whole year, no sports at all. So he worked really hard this year, and he loves it. So my gut is telling me I just need to let him come back to it and not, and just ignore that for a little while.
Yeah.
I have a few things.
Okay, you go first and then I'll go.
So your son tried out for a hockey team and he didn't make it. I want to empathize as a parent and having to deliver disappointing news to your kid. Awful. Completely awful. But really, I think about it, you didn't make him try out for it, right? He wanted to try out for it.
She actually was saying she went the other way. She's saying, I should have put my foot down and said he didn't have to try out, so then he wouldn't be experiencing this pain.
Right. And I am here to say that you did exactly the right thing, because what's the alternate option? The option is to not let him try out, so then he would never know if he was good enough.
Yep.
And he's going to go one of 85 different directions on this. He's either going to try harder next time and make the team, or he's going to surrender and give up and kind of crawl away in shame, but then something will come out of that, or a million things in between those two extremes. Odds are it's going to be somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be this wonderful lesson, then all of a sudden he's going to be so determined, and it's not like he's going to just shrivel away and disintegrate because he didn't make a team. These are the experiences that make our life give meaning and direction. And I would have been sadder if you would have said, no, you know what, buddy? I don't think you're ready for that. You allowed him to figure out for himself. And I know he's a feelings kid, but you got to let him experience that. Like the motto that I have for my kids is keep them safe and get out of their way. He is safe. Because he didn't make this team does not mean that everything is going to hell in a handbag. He's going to learn from this. You learn from your failures a lot more than you learn from your successes. So I think you put him in a position in the long term. This just happened today.
Right.
You're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to feel good today. Mm-mm. You're supposed to question your judgments.
Right.
But a year from now, it's going to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's exactly what I was going to say is, first of all, when you tell a kid they didn't make a team, which we've all had to do, or many of us have had to do, of course their first instinct is, I may not play again. That's what we all say when we try something. Even if as adults we've learned to not say it out loud, we'll say, well, I'm just going to give up. And that's his first instinct. You as his mom, though, and you can do this afternoon, so you didn't miss an opportunity. You could do this tomorrow or a week from now. Bring it back up. Say, you know about the team, the travel team. Say, do you know that what I appreciate more than watching you play is watching you take risks and put yourself out there? Mm-hmm. That what I'm most impressed by is the fact that you jumped in without knowing what was going to happen. That's what makes a person of character, and that's what will make you successful in life. And so even though you might feel sad or embarrassed or whatever, I want you to know that I could not be more proud of this whole experience. And whatever you're feeling about it, I'll let you. Like, it's not about talking him into feeling better. It's about letting him know that you don't perceive. It's about reminding them that when like we, our daughter just tried out for lacrosse and she tried out for JV. She's a freshman. And she thought about trying out for varsity, but she's like, I'm going to try out for JV. Well, she came home and she made the freshman squad and not JV. But what we said to her in different ways was, rock on, man. You took it up a notch and it didn't work out. But I think it's pretty damn cool that you put yourself in that position. And truthfully, I think she's going to be, now we can talk about this with her, but she's going to be better on this freshman team because she, you know, it's like a, like Todd said, it all kind of works itself out, but you don't need to know today, Aaron, how it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be like, okay, I need to have this resolved in myself. Like Todd said, be sad because it sucks because you're like, screw them. They're missing an awesome player and they could have had my son. And, you know, like,
well, that's, and be sad, but be happy because your son took the shot. Yeah. It would have been easier to be like, I don't think I'm good enough to play travel and I'll just kind of surrender back into the house league. No, he stepped up. He did succeed because he took the shot. The failure is when you don't try to take that shot, and he did it.
I want to tell a really short story, or it's actually a long story that I'm going to make very short. One of my best girlfriends, her brother was born with cerebral palsy, and he's a year older than her. And he's actually the middle child. And he has, if you saw him and spoke with him, you would know he has cerebral palsy in the way that he talks and in the way that he moves his gait. And he, his whole life, really wanted to have a girlfriend, and it just was not happening for him. In high school, it was very hard. He, you know, struggled very much. And then when Match.com came along, he started trying to meet people that way. And sometimes people would show up and see him and then just walk out, you know, kind of that kind of experience where people would judge him by the way that he looked. And he stayed on Match.com for 5 years. And one day he was meeting this girl named Susie at a coffee shop, and she walked in and sat down, and they have now been married for 8 years, and their first child was born last year. And the reason I'm telling you that story is that there is something to when you know who you are and when you want something, it doesn't always come right away, especially if you don't have the skill set, you know, like Steve is his name. He didn't have what a lot of people had. He looked differently. He acted differently. But he had a support system, and he had, people who said, keep going after what you want. And now he's one of, like, you know, the happiest people I know. So, and he was before too, but I always think about Steve whenever I'm like, oh, this is hard, or I'm struggling. I'm like, you know what? You know, sometimes we have to keep going towards something and being willing to trust that there's something more, and that there are people who love us, or there are teams that want us, or there are,
you know, bands that need us or friends that will find us and keep the faith, right?
So Sarah has been sitting, I know it's getting close to the end, but Sarah literally asked a question at 12:30.
Okay, let's answer.
And she has an infant with her.
Hi!
I want to see who this is. Who is that young person?
This is Gwen.
Hi, Gwen.
How old is Gwen?
4.5 months.
She's almost 5 months old. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your patience, Sarah and Gwen.
Look at Gwen's hair.
I know. Oh, she's got a killer do going on.
Yeah. Rocking the mohawk.
She is.
I have a question. So I have three kiddos, almost five, a 2.5-year-old, and then Gwen. And I feel like I can be so mindful about my responses, my reactions, you know, responding versus reacting. And then I hit like a patience limit.
Right.
Like my patience limit is like, okay, like I can feel it in my blood. Like I'm about to, like, I don't like to, but like I will squeeze my daughter's arm really hard or something because I'm like, I'm gonna lose it. And I, you know, and so I've tried, you know, I try running into my bedroom to get away from them to take deep breaths, but they follow me and they're loud. You know, I'm in the car with them and I can't get them to be quiet. I crank up the music. Like sometimes I just don't even know what to do. I guess I'm looking for, I know this is not something that's going to, I know this is never not going to happen again. And I, you know, I'm just trying to find better ways to deal with it because, you know, and the self-care is huge. I do so much better when I'm going to yoga, when I meditate, when I can get outside. I feel like I'm doing those things, especially now that I have three kids, like those are super important. And a lot of it is like the lack of sleep is huge for me. You know, when I'm like exhausted, it's like I wake up and I'm like, oh, here we go again. Right. So I don't know. I guess I'm just looking maybe for, I don't know, anything.
I do. I have something to say to you, Sarah and Gwen. Mm-hmm. This is the thread that I'm hearing through all these questions, everything we've talked mm-hmm. about, is this idea that I'm feeling this way and I don't want to be feeling this way, and how do I not feel this way? And the turnaround is, what if when you feel that way, there is what if there is a recognition of, oh my gosh, here it comes? Because like you said, Sarah, you can feel it in your body. You know it's coming. The patient shut. It's almost like the water's almost gone. You know what I mean? Like we only have so much and all of a sudden the water's being poured out. And to acknowledge that, even to say it out loud and start that conversation. Now, you know, Gwen may not fully understand it with words yet, but your other two, you can actually say to them, I really don't have anything left. And so we're, you know, and when you are in the car and when you are stuck, then instead of fighting against the feeling, you accept it. And again, this sounds like a really simple cliche thing to say, but it's been so helpful to me because the thread that's run through Jen and even what Aaron said and the initial question that that Carney had is like, there's this feeling, or especially coming off of the conference, like Amy Rose said, you know, and you're like, you go to a conference or you read a book or you know this stuff, but then you do something wrong. And are you doing something wrong, or are you just going through normal human emotions and you're, you know, suffering? The definition of suffering is not accepting what's happening. It's thinking it should be different. And so when your patience is gone and you're tired and you don't, and everybody's driving you crazy, you think to yourself, I should be better, instead of this is really normal. Do you see what I mean? And then you don't add on that layer of shame and you don't add on that layer of suffering. You're still going to be impatient and tired. It's not going to solve. You're not going to be like, I'm in joy now. It's just, I accept this. And that in itself is a practice because, like, you know, here's, you know, I'm going to talk about Jen for a second. She's been in her house for however many days and she's beating herself up thinking that she should be rising above a situation that not many humans could rise above. Do you see what I mean? She's like, I should be doing this better. I should be better. Or Sarah, you're like, I shouldn't be getting frustrated, but you are. So what if you, and again, this is a practice in itself, you know, because my words are one thing. It's another thing to be like, okay, I'm impatient now. What does it mean to accept this? It doesn't mean now I get permission to yell or now I get permission to be harmful. It's I get permission to not be perfect. And I get permission to take a deep breath and say to my kids, not now. I can't. I don't want to play and I don't want to read. I can't do it. But I will be able to do it once I have some time.
Well, and I would say in those moments, my advice is going to be more practical. My guess is if you're on Team Zen, you're probably a pretty good parent. That's my guess. I don't think there's many neglectful parents on Team Zen. Mm-hmm. And I also think that a lot of parents on Team Zen hold themselves up to a very high regard.
Or high standard.
And they want to be the perfect mom or the perfect dad and one that doesn't exist. And I don't know what your thing is, but I would say do what you have to do in that moment to get by. And if that means putting Gwen in a crib and letting your kids go watch 3 episodes of Sesame Street in a row, then let them do that. Because you're not helping them that much when you're just saying, well, I can't let them watch too much TV because then they'll be addicted to it. Like you tell these stories. So I would just say, give yourself a break and, don't think too hard and don't parent from 5 years from now, my kids are going to be damaged if I let them watch too much TV. Because in this moment, I have nothing to give. So you got to do what you can to get through that moment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let her just, any comments, feedback, Sarah?
No, I think that's really helpful to have that kind of maybe that those words to accept this.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's in me somewhere, the asness of, you know, like Dr. Shefali says, the asness of it is really helpful. So I think that's a good reminder for me. It's funny you mentioned the TV thing because I normally with my oldest daughter would have never let her watch TV like ever. And now it's like, oh, it's part of the routine. Like, mm-hmm. Mom's got to get ready. Yep, show. Put on a show. You can do it. You know, like, so I think I've come a long way in the last 5 years. And the other aspect of it is too is like I don't want to wish these little years away. Young years that I have with them. But at the same point, I'm like, this isn't forever, you know, like they will be older, but then I'm thinking, greater, bigger challenges. So it's kind of like,
no.
Well, and we just did a Zen talk, I think last time or 2 times ago, Lauren Burke asked a similar question because, you know, what we hear is often, oh, these times go by so quickly. And what Lauren was saying, I think it was Lauren, maybe it was somebody else.
And Kelsey too. Kelsey was commenting on it too.
It was, my gosh, I wish this phase would go away right now. Mm-hmm. And it was you, Kelsey. I'm looking right at you.
And at the same time, loving it in the moments that it's loving. It's not one or the other. Like when you say to yourself, I wish this time would go faster, there are times when you're like, I wish this time would go slower. And we have to live in the paradox of that rather than, oh my God, I can't believe I had that thought. I'm a horrible person. I'm a horrible mom. And then believing the story, you know, like a Sarah, because I know people are probably filling your mind with this. I should enjoy this because it's only going to get harder or more emotional. None of that's true. Mothering and parenting and fathering has its own set of challenges at every stage. And there's not a stage that's better and a stage that's worse. They are all what they're supposed to be. And you can handle all of them, and being present for them. You know what I did last night, you guys? There's this show that I'm watching right now called The Assassination of Gianni Versace, and it's a total like Kathy show. Like I love the in-depth, and I've got a lot of history with this show. And anyway, so last night Skylar wanted to come down and like hang out with me, and she wanted me to braid her hair, and she wanted me to do all these things, and I was like, you know what? She had just gotten out of the shower, and her hair was wet. I'm like, go upstairs, let your hair dry for 20 minutes. And once it's that dry, then it'll be perfect for me to braid. I just wanted to watch the Gianni Versace show.
You lied to her.
You know what? I didn't lie because it's true. 20 minutes or her hair would be more dry, but I could have just blown it dry.
You manipulated her.
No, this is what I did. I wanted to watch the show and it's okay. Do you see what I mean? Because then when she comes down, I'm ready to braid her hair. I am not resentful of her being there. It is, and she knew I was watching that show. I mean, it wasn't like I was like, oh, the TV's off, I'm pretending. I was like, go upstairs for 20 minutes, I'll do my thing, you do your thing. I have every right to have 20 minutes doing something I want, just like she has the right to ask me for what she needs. We pretend that we have to need nothing and they can get whatever they need from us at any time. And that's impossible. That's like a dry well, you know, like trying to pull water from a dry well. So I watch horrible shows about serial killers.
That's where I was going. I said, how much does this show fill up your mindful spiritual cup?
Well, it doesn't, but I'm also Kathy. I'm not always mindful spiritual. I also like pop culture and I like Law and Order and and that's okay too.
And she likes bad movies.
Yes. Yes. And bad music and good music.
Mostly bad.
And I like, and that's okay. I don't apologize for any of that because that's just who I've always been, you know, Todd knows. So I guess I'm telling you guys that because I don't want you to think like, I wish you guys could come live with us sometimes. And
come on, we got a basement.
Sometimes people are like, you guys, there's tension in your house. Sometimes I'm like, WTF, who do you think we are? Like, yes. Sometimes I get frustrated. Sometimes I choose Gianni Versace over braiding my kid's hair. Sometimes I get frustrated at Todd. You know, sometimes my house is a mess. Like, hello. And the point is, the goal, it's not about, yeah, let's all have messy homes and not be mindful.
Millie wants to come with us, but just her.
I know. Yes, that's what we should do. If we lived closer, then you'd be like, bye, kids. See, I'm going to Kathy and Todd's to watch their tension.
I got my sleeping bag.
I'm going to stay the night. See, you can stay in Skylar's room. She would love it. She always wants guests. So anyway, my point is it's about the awareness of it and the self-acceptance. A lot of the thread of all this is we are filled with this story that we should be different. And this is kind of what my pre-conference workshop was about, and I don't know if that came through. But when you're honest and when you're congruent and when you're just like, there's an isness to this and this is who I am, then you take off this whole layer of shame and this whole layer of pretending, and you just get to live every moment doing the next right thing, doing the best you can without all that heavy energy all over you telling you you're doing it wrong. Because who decides who's doing it right? You know, like, what does doing it right mean? Because you could look at anything and there's going to be someone with a differing opinion. You know, there are people out there who say we should have our kids have more technology, you know? So if you want to like plead your case. So my point is that last thing I'll say about this is sometimes we're like, but if I'm too self-accepting, I went over this with my college students because I was talking about the word content and they didn't like the word content because they thought content meant lazy. Mm-hmm. And we got really deep about what does content really mean? Does content mean complacency? Or does content mean that's a good place to start everything? When I'm content, I actually have the energy to do this or say this or show up. And that's not laziness. I feel like laziness is when we're so overwhelmed by life, we're hiding. So again, a lot of it's words and I'll just shut up.
Millie's going to see Rob Bell tomorrow.
Ah, we're going next month.
We're going next month. So for the Chicago peeps, we're going to see Shefali tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know where she's speaking, just send us an email. And then Jennifer wants to live with Aunt Peg. She says yes, that she would adopt her.
Everybody wants to live with Aunt Peg. She's giving thumbs up. My aunt, if you guys didn't know this about her, you probably didn't, but she's collected teddy bears her whole life. So she's got, her whole house is like filled with these awesome teddy bears. And it's such like this warm, one of my favorite places in the world. And she's kind of like,
well,
a teddy
and
bear.
Not that I've ever done this, but if you're ever in her house in Galena and you play a drinking game, like every time you see a teddy bear, you got to take a sip of beer, you end up getting really, 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 really drunk.
So you can't play that game.
So don't play the teddy bear game in the Galena house.
We've never played that game before.
Well, I've been there with my guy friends and we have played that game and everybody lost. Nobody won the game. Because there's literally over 100 and some odd teddy bears.
And that's because my aunt was a principal of an elementary school. She like created it and started it. And so every kid and every parent for however many years gave her teddy bears as gifts, you know? So not only did she buy her own, but her whole life has been filled with bears.
We should call it the teddy bear game. You guys should come to Galena.
Do you guys see on her wall right there?
There's that's a teddy bear right there. There's two of them.
There's two, of course
there's
there
are. There's a picture there's of a teddy bear, and then there's the head of a teddy bear.
All my children have teddy bears, all from Peg. So there he is. Good stuff. There he is.
So we're going to end the Zen Talk, but I want to try something different. So it's officially over. We don't know when our next Zen Talk is.
Yeah, we'll email you guys today.
Email out. Mm-hmm. But I want to try to share a screen, so I'm going to play a quick video just for my own testing mechanism. So
if you need to go.
We're going to adjourn the Zen Talk, but if you want to, I want to try
that's
to.
That's action. That's when you start.
Action.
So look. So
1, 2, 3.
That's how you start. How do we end?
Cut.
Cut. There we go. Cut.
So stay on, and I want to see if this works. Oh, you don't have to stay on. Let me see. YouTube. History. Okay, so I'm going to try something. Let's see. I don't know if it's working. No. Share screen. Can anybody see that? No, not really. Back. Cancel. Hold on, try it. Can you hear this?
All of a sudden, this woman, you know, with the big dark glasses, the Bloomingdale bags, she starts walking right through the ropes. I yell down at her, "Hey, you can't go there, you stupid." Enormous goddamn crane crashes right down on the legs. And he's screaming, "My leg!"
Because it's funny.
"My leg!" And I say, "No shit, your leg. You got a 2,000-pound goddamn crane on." Now, do you know how in an emergency you get like superhuman strength? I reach down and I lift this crane, and the nest was able to slide her out from under. The doctors were able to save her legs. So the moral is, don't walk where you're not supposed to walk, because there may not be somebody with superhuman strength to save you, little ass. And don't do drugs. That's it.
That's it. All right, stop share. End meeting. See you guys. Bless ya. It's from City Slickers, everybody. It's a great movie. You got to go see it.
Bye.
No, but you're not supposed
see
to
you
unmute.
Guys.
You're not supposed to unmute yourself. You got to keep your...
I didn't know people can unmute themselves. What's that, sweetie? I know, but I coughed during every swear word.
No, you can't unmute me.
It's illegal.
No, it's
well, I'm coughing, they're coughing.
That's how we went rogue last time, Todd.
Oh, really?
We just unmuted ourselves and talked to each other.
So did it come through? Let me stop recording.